Hello, hello, hi to Go Mommy Dearest.
Hi, hi, I'm Kai, aka Adi.
And welcome to Thought Digest, where we
amplify conversations
one thought at a time. Today's a very exciting episode.
We have our first guest of the year.
Yes.
And who better than?
Letabo, guys, I'm here.
Guys, everybody has been wanting us to have a guest. So how do you feel that you're our first guest? Are you nervous? Are you excited? How do you
I'm
feel?
I'm honored more than anything.
Such a big word.
I really am.
That makes me blush.
I'm not nervous at all. Like,
that's great.
I'm comfortable here. It's cool.
You're comfortable?
Yeah.
Okay, tell us what you do.
So I am a student.
Where are you studying? Oh, sorry.
I'm getting there. So I'm going to be doing my honors this year at UP.
Congratulations.
I'm studying visual studies.
Mm-hmm.
To the people at home, guys, everyone asks me what visual studies is. Mm-hmm. Like, even my own mother, she doesn't know.
What is visual studies?
I hear visual studies and I'm already thinking like art.
The best way I can describe it is like high art practicing. Mm. So it's like art history based, but also combines like many disciplines like architecture, social sciences, art history, all of that. So that's the best.
That's literally what I thought.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's anything visual. I was like, okay.
But guys, I don't draw or paint.
Okay. So. What do you be doing?
I analyze art for sure, but I don't draw or paint. I cannot draw a stick figure easily.
Do you ever get drawing? Okay, no, it's fine. I'm going on a tangent because I'm so excited that every year. Okay, what else do you do?
Obviously, I make TikTok content.
Yes.
I've been making it for 2 years now, I think.
Really?
Yeah, but initially I had like a very different account. I deleted it now.
Okay.
Where I used to make like very short jokes, but that was for like my friends.
Okay.
And then I think in 2023, I realized that didn't feel like very authentic to mm-hmm. who I am as a person and mm-hmm. what I want to put out in the world.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So like I deleted that account and started from scratch in like July 2023. And then I started making long form content.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Primarily, I feel like most of the content that I've come across of yours is commentary,
yes.
which is lovely, very insightful, yes. very wise, hot takes most of the time, like, but also candid, really, like the kind of candor that we need in conversations right now, especially because of what's happening in the world right now, arrests and all of that. But I think you provide a platform for us to have meaningful discourse. And that's why I put you forward as a guest, because I was like, oh my goodness, perfect. This is very Thought Digest coded.
Yeah.
Because not only do you put forward a problem, you put forward a solution as well. You put your experience as well in the whole picture. You don't just speak from, you know, a bird's eye view. You're there. And you say, I went to this school and I know
the vibes. Like,
you know what I'm saying? Which is again, very true to Thought Digest. And we thought you were perfect. Absolutely perfect.
Like, we didn't dispute. Like, when Kaya sent your video on the group chat,
There was no dispute.
It was so quick. I was like, okay, cool, sure. And then we hit you up immediately. And then I actually discovered you not from that video. I first saw your content, I told you, through the whole, like, scandal, the
life update,
the scandal and everything like this.
Yes.
So, yeah, that's where I discovered your content
from. Catch me up. I didn't see that.
Okay, so, long story short, my dad got scammed.
Mm-hmm. 300,000.
No. 300,000 is the money he stole. That's a very different conversation altogether.
What?
He got scammed. So my dad started having like very strange financial troubles in 2024.
Mm-hmm.
But the reason was always unclear, because we thought his business was doing well. We thought him as a person was doing well. And our family has always treated him as the most financially responsible person, the most mature. And then all of a sudden, everything went downhill. And then he told me that he had an investment through an international company. And I did some digging and found out it was not an investment. And he met Forex traders through TikTok. And the traders were using... Do you know Tuto? She's like an influencer. She's like friends with K-Arms.
Mm-mm.
Scammer was using her photos to like
scam my
dad.
Goodness.
And I think that's how I figured out that he was being scammed. And then I discovered that like he had sent her different amounts of money over a course of like a few months.
Yeah.
And the last, I think, straw was him sending her, I mean, think more than 10,000 rand just in a week to like get a car to access his investment. And And then I discovered that he stole money from a stock fair, like 350,000.
Oh my gosh.
And those people came to us demanding it. And
real life.
Like, I'm not even joking.
They came to your spot.
And
sorry, the nigga in me is coming out. They came to your spot. They did.
And unfortunately, he had to sell his car. They took his car to pay them back, and they now control his business. And any future profits he makes until the debt is paid off belongs to them.
Oh my goodness.
So that's where
it is. How has that affected your relationship?
We are not talking right now. Yeah. Because I just felt as though there wasn't enough accountability on his side. Mm-hmm. Because A, he didn't want me to do any investigating. Like, he was...
So he knew.
Okay with, like, us not knowing if he's being scammed or not.
Mm-hmm.
And it was genuinely coming from a place of me wanting to help him. Because I was concerned. Because they have his private information. They have sensitive photos. They have his address. So I thought if we find out who they are, what they're doing, we can go to the authorities and get him help. But he was very in denial. I think he's embarrassed.
Mm-hmm.
But, and I tried my best to show him that there's nothing to be embarrassed about, because the literal worst has happened. They've already taken the money.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the day, these people scammed you.
Mm.
You know, they've committed a crime against you. They've hurt you. So you should, like, if criminals aren't embarrassed and they can sleep at night,
Why
should you be embarrassed to go tell the cops
and
tell people your story? So I just didn't like the fact that he felt, I don't know, emasculated, I guess, because there was just no need to feel that. Like, we are all on your side.
Yeah.
And also, I just, in the series I made, I also discussed that we've always had like a very turbulent relationship.
I see.
And I think this just like
made it worse. Yeah.
Because when he's frustrated, he tends to, like, let his tongue go loose a little bit. And I don't know. I think when you move through life, you really need to be careful with how you speak to people. Because
especially the people who have your best interests.
Yeah, like, I don't know. Like,
you investigate it because you care.
Yeah, and I'm not questioning you because I think you're stupid or this. I care about you, my dad. But also, you need to stop talking crazy to the people around you. Like, we all love you. We care for you.
Yeah.
And, you know, I know some people say, oh, but maybe he's just frustrated. But guys, even when you are frustrated,
calm down a bit. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think, you know what? I could see how he would feel emasculated. Money is a big thing for men. Yeah. It is a massive, part of their masculinity as well. I think the way that we've you know, cultivated societies that a man's worth is in his money, you know? And so the fact that he got scammed out of so much money and then he was also responsible for taking money from people, it is emasculating, but I do hear you, like, he should be taking responsibility. And a part of me is side-eyeing the fact that he didn't want you to investigate because did you not want me to find out something, buddy? You know? But hopefully, I think when things simmer down a little bit and he sobers up, because it's a traumatic experience to lose that much amount of money. And like, yo, everybody knows, type beat, your car is gone, all of your, it's really traumatic. So hopefully, you know, when he takes a little bit of time to sober up and heal and register and come to, maybe you guys can revisit that relationship.
I'm hoping for that too. I think the problem right now is that he doesn't want to process his emotions. He'd rather act as if it hasn't happened, or let's move past it. But I think sometimes you need to look at your wounds. Like, you do need to look at them. I understand that for some situations, moving on as quickly as possible is the best thing you can do for yourself. But for some of them, you need to really sit and
evaluate,
like, how you went wrong.
Yeah, how did I end up here?
Like, how did I get here? Why did I get here?
What was I looking for?
Yeah, also need to, I think, reevaluate your relationship with money, because I think wanting easy money has a bit of greed involved. I think
a bit.
Like, I don't know.
It's
like
very greed-centered.
You also need to, like, because that's the thing. Something my mom always said to me is that money that's fast, money that comes from hurting others, and money that you do not know what you want for, you'll never enjoy it and it'll never do anything useful for you, because even with the money my dad stole, there's nothing to show for it.
Mm.
It's like, he's worse than when he, you know, before he stole it. He's worse. Like, he ruined his life for something that wasn't worth it in the end. And I think that's...
That's such wise insight from your mom. I feel like I've fallen in love with your mom and I ain't even met her.
You know, everyone in the comments is always like, oh my gosh, who's your mom?
Yeah. It's a mom reveal.
Yeah, because so like, we can love it together. Parts. Like, I was involved in each and every part. But how are you now? Like, after everything has happened, how do you feel now?
I am calmer. Guys, let me tell you something. In the thick of it, I was having nightmares. Like, every single night, I couldn't sleep. Because I also felt like, I don't know, I felt guilt that other people's families and children and livelihoods were affected because of this. Because I'm like, you know what? I have my mother. I can lean on my mother. But some people, that money was all they had. That was like their last resort. And I felt super guilty for it. I'm like, you know, I have a meal. I have a roof over my head. I can continue with my life. But some people's lives are genuinely stuck because of what my dad has done. And I also felt guilty that, you know what, I'm expecting my life to go forward and good things happen for me. But like, he's at the center of their misfortune. So I just felt like very guilty.
Why the heck am I getting emotional? I don't know. Like, I'm... Let me try to process these emotions. Yeah. Okay. I feel... I admire that much humanity. Like, for you to feel that bad that you're having nightmares is such a wonderful sign of a conscience that is intact. Yeah. Do you know what I'm saying? And it really... I don't know. I didn't expect it to touch that part of my heart. But
no, but it says a lot about your character. I think that's when I personally like fell in love with your content through that story, because I saw how you were sharing people's individual stories and how like this affected them and everything like that. I'm like, oh my God, you're not just worried about your dad. You're worried about everybody involved.
That's beautiful.
And I was like, wow, that shows a great character. We love you.
Thank you.
I'm just letting you know.
And we're like, we're not even 10 minutes in.
And it's like,
please don't leave.
Don't leave us.
I could stay here. This couch is very cool.
Please, what I was saying. You are in. Like, what?
Yeah. Okay. Like, I don't think our life updates like matter to me.
Yeah.
Like, okay.
Nothing important to say.
What can we say? What? Okay, give us your life update.
So it's Fashion Week, if you can't tell.
Yeah.
We can tell.
Like, do you remember when she walked? I was like, what? Yeah.
Stop. So I've been doing, you know, a Kaya takeover on my platform. So just really sharing the different sides of myself, the artistic side, the musical side, the side of myself that loves hair, makeup, and this week it happens to be fashion. So I want to start off with something monochrome. To me it's very simple, but you know, monochrome, and I'm really falling in love with looking good. Last year, I think I was in such a, I felt displaced for the most part mentally, and so it showed up in how I looked. I didn't take that much. I wasn't that intentional about how I looked. I thought, okay, no makeup today. The hair, it looks as good as it should. Mm-hmm. The outfit, I'm gonna wear a 2-piece that I got from I'm going to put different. But I wasn't intentional. I did look good, but it wasn't an intentional good. It was just a, you know, coinky dink good. You know, so this year I wanna be. It adds so much confidence to my walk, my talk, how I show up. I know that if I look and feel put together, I'm going to show up as my best self. Mm-hmm. And so that's the message for Fashion Week, is that it's not really about the clothing, but it's about how the clothing makes you feel, you know? So that's my life update. I'm falling in love with fashion again, which it took a while to get here, but I'm here. Hey, the other faces was about my emotional, mental, what?
It's not looking good, bro. Like,
well, on the bright side, it's March. Happy New Year, guys. This is when my year begins. Yeah. So I'm always grateful for a new day because it presents a new opportunity to, you know, reinvent yourself, you know what I'm saying? Redo things, revisit. I love the opportunity that a new day presents. So that's why I try not to think too much about yesterday, which can be quite detrimental because it's something like a compartmentalization something. But I'm trying not to do that. I'm conscious of yesterday, but I don't let it burden me.
That's beautiful.
I like that.
Yeah, that's really beautiful.
You guys are in sync.
Yeah. Yeah, no. Yeah, that's what it, yeah, that's just a vibe. It's just a vibe. Like, it's just a vibe. Purse.
What's your life update, mommy?
My life update. Oh, Jehovah. Yeah, guys, dear Pila, I'm alive and well.
Yeah.
I think nothing. Oh no, I'm not gonna bring this to the couch because I said that I was, but it's hard. It's hard not to bring certain things to the couch because I promise not to talk about a certain person anymore on this platform.
Okay.
But it's very difficult not to. But I blocked my my father blocked me.
Oh.
This week, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's different.
You see, we're twinning.
Yeah, we're twin.
My dad is blocked.
That is like, what's up?
This is so popcorn and cheese coated.
Really?
Very much. They always bond over daddy issues on their side.
Like, gang.
Shout out popcorn and cheese.
So yeah, my father blocked me this week. Okay. And shame. The reason why he blocked me, it's because he doesn't want to face the music, I guess.
Okay.
He doesn't want to face the music because... I didn't say much. I didn't say a lot. I was actually like guiding him in a way about like how to handle a situation. Because basically context, my little sister asked for money for uniform.
Okay.
For school, you know, because she's going in matric, they're getting matric jackets, matric skirts, everything like that. I'm like, okay, I can't afford that right now. Subscribe to memberships. I can't afford that right now because, like, I'm taking on already so much responsibility, yeah, you know, at home. So, ask your father, you know. She asked him and then he sent a VN saying that he's paying for her school fees and he only has one salary. I'm like, this man, he only has one salary and he's paying for her school fees because my mom didn't pay for her school fees. My mom was unemployed the whole of last year. Yeah. My mom didn't pay for her school fees, so he has to take up that burden, everything like that. And then in the message I sent him, I was like, correction, it's not my mom didn't pay for school fees, it's you guys didn't pay for school fees. Yeah. You cannot put a responsibility of like a child. Oh, this fly, I'm gonna slap it.
That's why I'm gonna slap the fly.
You cannot like put responsibility of like raising a child onto one person,
yeah,
and say because that person, like if that person couldn't like do something, you should have like stepped up because he was doing nothing else, you know.
Yeah.
It's just how life is. So I'm like, you can't single out my mom in that instance. And secondly, my mom did A, B, C, D, and C for us when we were growing up on one salary.
Exactly.
So the one salary comment makes no sense. Like, you cannot have a child.
Was that your rebuttal? That was your response to him.
Yeah, that was my response to him.
Oh.
I was like, you cannot like make like a comment and say one salary. My mom had one salary and she did A, B, C, D, and E. So that's not a...
For three
kids. And that's not a, like a solid excuse, you know? So you can't use that as an excuse. And then I also added in a little bit of like a Bible verse because he's a man of God for context. And this is, yeah, in inverted commas. Let me see if I can find that Bible verse. And it wasn't really much. I actually like addressed him with so much respect.
Okay.
Yeah, I was like, yeah, don't, I was like, I even say this message is not to disrespect you, but to make you aware of the burden you chose to carry when you conceived my sister. I did not have a say when you chose to make her, so it's unfair on me for you to rest the burden of raising her on me, a 22-year-old girl who's unmarried with no children. You know, I didn't ask for that responsibility, so you cannot put it on me.
Yeah.
And then I was like, fathers, do not exasperate your children. Instead, bring them up in the training and instruction of the Lord. And it's Ephesians 6, you know. And I sent him that, and then he didn't respond to it. He blocked me. And I was like, he's so dramatic.
But also, I just feel like it's what some men don't understand is that when you're asked to like do a specific thing for a child, school fees, uniform, a trip, a shoe, I don't know,
yeah,
trip, dance, they neglect the fact that it takes more to raise a child. Like you as a parent who lives with the child,
yes,
has so many unexpected expenses.
Yes.
You feed the child, you house the child, you're paying for the electricity that child uses, the water, the bed they're sleeping on. So it's not to count, you know, what, who does what,
yes,
but it's like, what we're asking, the one thing we're asking you to do compared to everything that else this child is, needs to,
yes,
survive. It's insane.
You're saying I'm putting my hands up on this. It's, yeah, it's insane.
And
it's,
you're asking for the bare minimum. Money is the bare minimum.
Literally.
To raise a child.
Literally.
There's more to it. Like the emotion. He's not there for her discipline. He's not there to correct her. He's not there to guide her. He's not there any way in her life. And she asked him for one thing. uniform. She's in matric. Other kids are going to have jackets. Other kids are going to do this. Other kids are going to do that. And you're not thinking as a father, let me work harder if my one salary is not enough so I can give my child what she needs. Instead, you're saying, actually, that's a burden I'd choose not to carry, which is insane.
And uniform is a once-off expense.
It is a once-off. We're not even asking for a reoccurring expense. It's a once-off expense, you know? So I felt so, like, the more I try reason with him, the more I communicate with him, makes me realize that, and like, who is this man? I don't know who this man is.
Yeah.
Like, I really don't know who this man is. And I think God has healed me, because when he blocked me, I was like, oh, he blocked me. Like, it didn't hurt. It's just, how can I put it? It just puts a bitter taste in my mouth. And that will bring us to our girl chat, teenage pregnancy. Like, be careful who you choose to be the father of your kids.
Mm.
Because you are not the only person who has to deal with that person. Your kids have to deal with them too.
Yeah.
If you can't handle that man, what do you expect your kids to do, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so.
The way she just segued into the next segment.
Yeah, we
might as well go there.
We might as well.
Guys, for today's girl chat segment, we're discussing the relationship between poverty and teenage pregnancy.
Yeah. What are your thoughts on teenage pregnancy, actually?
I think it is a very complex thing because...
I agree. Like,
you know, it's one of those topics where I hate it when people are like very definitive. Like, it's only happening because of one thing and one thing. It depends. Like, it depends on the situation. And I think people would treat it better if they listen to the people who are actually in it, or who have lived through it, or who have children who are pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think teenage pregnancy could be because of a variety of different things.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think A, there's sexual assault.
Mm.
I think B, a lot of adult men are
very
engaged.
Relevant for SA.
Yeah, I think a lot of adult men are engaging in very inappropriate relationships with teenage girls.
Mm-hmm.
I think sexual education is not as comprehensive as some people think it is.
Mm-hmm.
I also think there's like... I don't know. I think parents have very difficult relationships with talk about sex with their kids.
Mm.
And so their kids go and do it on their own.
Yeah.
And learn the hard way, I guess.
You know what's so crazy? Mm-hmm. You would think you got the PDF with all my talking points. Because you literally mentioned everything. Like, everything I want us to go into. Because it's so complex. People think it's narrow. Like, oh, you see this fly. We need doom. I think there's a fly problem in South Africa.
No, it's summer, guys. These guys are everywhere.
This fly got me like...
Someone who hates... Like, even if we're in a restaurant and she sees something flying around, she won't focus on the conversation. Like, she'll be smacking mosquitoes in a 5-star restaurant. And I'm just like, oh, I can't take him nowhere,
have
bro.
Have you seen a mosquito, like, on you? Like, actually, like...
Yes!
See, I can't deal with that.
I saw one of those last week. It was... I could feel something painful, like...
Oh, there's two! That's why you guys are suffering.
Doom, please. Thank you. Anyways,
I deny.
Anyways, what was I saying? You see, these mosquitoes distract me. I'm saying mosquitoes.
Flies.
They distract me. Yeah, it's a very complex thing. And I like how you mentioned different facets of things. Because like, people just go immediately and say, oh, she's fast. Oh, she's forward.
Yeah.
Oh, she's this. Oh, she's that, you know?
Yeah.
And it makes it difficult for them to then navigate their lives after that because they experience so much stigma.
Yeah.
Kaya, how do you feel about teenage pregnancy?
Okay, let me share some stats. Nah, okay. Which is some... These stats are insane,
okay,
bro.
Okay.
Now, one, this is a very eye-opening indicator. Overall, 61.4% of young people reportedly having graduated from high school.
Okay.
Only 61% of young people have graduated from high school.
Oh.
Here.
In this country. Okay.
That's one, education. Nah? That, we'll talk about the link between poor education and teenage pregnancy in a minute. Among female youth, 19.2% had an adolescent pregnancy. So of the 61.4, 19.2 had an adolescent pregnancy. So adolescence is from 12, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah? 19.2, that's insane. And among male youth, 5.8% had impregnated a girl when they were an adolescent, so between 12 and 19.
See how the stats are not matching?
You get it? 16.2% of the women... 16.2% of the women had an unwanted pregnancy, and 6.7 had terminated a pregnancy. These stats are madness. And then, nearly 365 teenage girls give birth in South Africa every day, with 10 of those daily births to moms younger than 15.
That is insane.
That is so...
365 that a day?
That is so insane.
And 10, more than 10 are under 15? The stats are madness.
I'm not surprised by the stats. Because, like, my relationship with teenage pregnancy, I went to an all-girls school.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And my school actually was on the radio and on the news for having the most pregnancies in a high school in Johannesburg.
Crazy.
Yeah, we were on the news in my year. I was in grade 8 at the time. And we had a grade 8 learner who was pregnant, a grade 9 learner who was pregnant. Grade 10. In every grade, there were pregnant girls. Like, in grade 9, there were 6 girls pregnant. Like, I think in total, we had 19 girls pregnant at the school at the time. At the same time, 19 girls pregnant at school. And that's most of them under the age of 18.
Mm.
So it was a whole thing. It was in the news. It was in everything. So I've seen teenage pregnancy live. I even have, like, friends, like, in high school who had kids young and everything like that. So I've seen it live. And, yeah, I guess... As you said, it's like a cumulative, like, of factors. Like, some girls genuinely just, like they. There was this one girl. Her pregnancy was so beautiful in school. Like, she was like, I'm telling you.
What?
I'm telling you. Like, in a sense of, like, she glamorized her pregnancy. She made it look beautiful in a sense. Because, like, her man used to drop her off. I think he was a taxi driver or something.
Oh my gosh.
He used to drop her off at school every morning, or if you can't drop her off, have, like, one of the other guys, I think maybe it was a boss or something, have one of the other guys drop her off in the morning at school. She'd be carrying, like, food in the morning. He'd come drop her food during, like, lunch, like, at the office for her. She was hungry. She didn't wear school shoes. She wore house slippers. She wore her uniform. Sorry, like she didn't care about her baby bump showing. She was, like, on some, like, she was so ready. She was, like, so ready to take on this world with her pregnancy. And then we even had a girl who had an abortion at school.
At school?
Yeah, she had an abortion. She took the fetus. She put it in a bag. Guys, my school.
What?
My school, the ghetto.
Let me stop for this one.
I went to a school in the ghetto, y'all. The ghetto. Literally, this girl literally, like, had an abortion, and I guess it happened at school. She took the fetus and put it in a black bag and put it in, you know, the pad disposal bags in the bathroom?
Yeah.
She, in the bins, she put the bag in the bin. And then she went about her day. And then how they caught it off is the cleaner came and there was so much blood on the bathroom floor. And she's like, what's going on? And then there was a smell. So she went to the box and then she found the plastic and she saw something that scared her. She called her life sciences teacher. The teacher saw it and it was a fetus.
Oh my God.
And that's how her father then found out she's pregnant. Because they called the father, they called the parents, they had to call the ambulance because you lost so much blood. Like, are you sure you're okay? What's going on?
Yeah.
And that's how her father found out she was pregnant, through that whole incident. Like, we've had so many girls. Like, there was this one girl who was carried by the ambulance because she was giving... Guys, my school, the ghetto. So I've seen teenage pregnancy live.
Live jive. Where did you live? Like, where was your high school?
I'm not scared of this, naming the school shame. Waverly Girls High School. It was in the newspapers.
Which area is this?
It's the east.
Where in the east?
It's right across St. Mary's. You know St. Mary's?
I know exactly where the school is.
You know the school?
I know where it is. I've been to St. Mary's before.
So yeah, exactly, yeah. It's the school right next to St. Mary's. It's in a suburb. The school's in a suburb. It's right next door, like, the most expensive school in the country, right? Mm-hmm. One of the most expensive schools in the country. Yeah,
that's interesting.
And it's in the suburbs, but most of the students, the demographic where they came from, is Alex.
Okay,
that's what I wanted to find out.
So is it like a semi-private type of situation?
Yeah, maybe now it's changed. You know, in my days it was public. It was giving public, semi-private, yeah, type of thing. Like, if you don't pay school fees, they won't kick you out.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah, I know.
Sure. I think where majority of the girls were from is indicative of how they ended up, right? Yeah. Because, you know, upon research, guys, we do our research on this podcast, the relationship between your socioeconomic standing and teenage pregnancy is the two are directly linked.
Mm.
Because when you live in an area where poverty is at the threshold, your instincts, your survival instincts kick in before anything else.
Yeah.
We have had, I also want us to recognize our privilege in this conversation as well. We have had the privilege to focus on our studies.
Mm.
In those areas where, in impoverished areas, they don't have that privilege. Their primary focus is getting from day to day to day to day. And sometimes that is so much so the focus that even the young ones are roped into providing for the family. They also feel the pressure of getting a job and making sure their younger siblings eat. You find that the oldest sibling there will be the one who's the caretaker while, you know, the mom or the father goes out to work. So when survival instincts kick in that young, especially for females, there are very few opportunities presented to you to get money. Does that make sense? And so the taxi driver situation is again a very stark example of the kind of situation that people who live in those areas find themselves in. Because here's somebody who can take care of me and my family, and all he requires is sex. And couple that with inadequate sex ed, no available contraception in the area. She doesn't even know the perils of being sexually active. We've spoken about this on the podcast at length, how being sexually active is already puts you at risk for so many things. You know, it puts you at risk for STDs, STIs, all of these, your sickness, mental health issues, deteriorating well-being altogether. But they don't know that. And so sex is presumed to be a normal part of a relationship, especially a relationship with somebody who's giving you money. So like you said, it is a plethora of things that contribute to teenage pregnancy. And let me say, from my perspective, that one of being fast and, you know, being promiscuous, for me, it's the least of our concerns in the teenage pregnancy conversation. It is really the least. I think for me, the most prominent one is that economic status, that lifestyle.
You know, when you were speaking, it made me think about because I feel like when you grow up in poverty and not many of the people around you go to university, go to school and everything, that's not something you initially desire. Yeah. Like, you don't desire that. You desire to be able to, like, make money to eat the next meal, you know? Mm. Like, your desires are different. So it would make sense why, like, those girls tended to not be, like, focused on school and everything like that. Because I remember there were three girls who were pregnant at the same time by the same guy.
Oh, you're lying.
The same transport driver. I'm telling you, my school. What? They were pregnant at the same time by the same transport driver. And that was their fight and their discourse and everything like that. It's like, he's mine, he's mine, he's mine. Like, and it's like a thing of like, hey, man, if you really don't think that there's more to life and the environment you are in doesn't show you that there's more to life than that man, it would make sense why that would be your primary focus, you know? Because there was even a girl who was on her third baby in matric. She already had three kids. And I was like, and the first thing you say is like, you didn't learn by the first, by the second, by the third, but who's to say she's not living with this man and she's not already his wife at that age? And if you can see the stark contrast, it's taxi drivers, transport drivers, all these men are way older than them. Like, you have no business impregnating 3 15-year-olds.
Yeah.
You have no business doing that. So, yo, this is very enlightening.
Yeah. Also, what I'm gauging from that is, in those communities, and I'm not going to negate the fact that this exists in our communities as well, middle class, you know, upper class society. But there, the men get away with things more. If you have money, it's prevalent in our society as well. But I'm talking about the age gap relationships. They happen so easily there because it's money. You find that those girls were fighting over that man, not because he's a loving, caring, generous, considerate man. Money. Mm. That's what it is. He takes care of her one way or the other, or gives her her desires. Also, when you live, I think also I'm speaking from a standpoint of when I was younger, I wanted a lot. You want for things a lot. And you can tell when somebody has and doesn't have, and there are different ways to get this thing. I didn't have a phone until so much later in life. And there are opportunities presented to you to have the phone easier, you know? So when you're in a position of lack, to get the thing that you want, there are many compromises that you have to make. And unfortunately, the people around you are making the same compromises. So it doesn't seem like much of a compromise at all. Mm. Also, the country that we live in plays
a big
massive role. The stats, the SA stats, sexual assault stats, we're on YouTube so we can say that. Sexual assault stats are through the roof. Yeah. As it stands, I think 3 out of 5 women have experienced sexual assault one way or the other. Yeah. 3 out of 5? That's 60%.
I want to ask you, like, so you went to, like, upper class schools, let's be honest.
Model C.
Is it Model C?
Yeah.
Model C schools. Did you see teenage pregnancy, like, with your own eyes? Did you ever see that, experience that?
So I know of one person who went to our sister's school.
Yeah.
Who, but that's the thing. She, how do I explain this? So she went to the school, but she was on a scholarship. So she is from the community.
Oh,
and
I see.
You know, something I think about often is that, like, I think poverty kind of, like, robs you of the privilege to dream.
I'm telling you.
Because, like, I think it's a privilege to dream and think of better. Mm. So when you're, like, trapped in that cycle, sometimes it's not even that there's no way out or you don't see a way out. I don't even think they can, like, conceptualize and, like, it turns a way out. Like, it doesn't exist. And so I think even though she had a scholarship, she could go to the school. Mm. There are a lot of things that the scholarship itself doesn't cover. Mm. You know, like, yes, it can pay your fees, but it doesn't really bridge the gap in lifestyles as well as the mentalities, because I think it's very difficult for people in the township to go to private schools and, like, transition effectively. There's so much support that you don't get from your community.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of understanding that is not there because, like, okay, maybe you could be the first generation private school goer.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes you tend to still be stuck in that.
The same cycle.
Yeah. Like,
now, I want to know, like, how was the sex education for you guys in, like, Model C? That's
a fantastic question.
Okay, it was very weird, I'll be very honest, because it's a Catholic school. So it was kind of conservative as well, which is very problematic. I remember in, was it grade 10? So I was part of the confirmation class because, like, if you're Catholic, you get confirmed, you get First Holy Communion, all of that stuff. And we were, like, being told about, like, a marriage being fruitful, total and free. Like, a marriage has to produce a child. It has to, like, be valid in the eyes of God. So I think, as much as, like, it's a modern school, and yes, we have LO that teaches you the basics of what sex is.
Condoms.
They could never really have in-depth conversations about it because it was very much, well, sex is not for pleasure, it's for having a baby in a marriage by married couples.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, we're in the real world, you know? Mm. Like, and it doesn't play out like that in the real world. And I think I can tell from, like, the attitude that, like, a lot of the boys had. They were, like, itching to do it because they were very curious and didn't really have an understanding of it. I think their attitudes related to anything that is different in general. It's just very strange. Like, it's just very...
I can relate to that. No, Catholic schools, itself.
Listen, guys. When I was in grade 9, I went to this, like, festival. I don't think I'm allowed to say the name of the festival. I don't think I'm allowed to say the name. I don't think I'm allowed to say the name. Okay. But what I will say to you is that at the festival, it was through the school, and we were given these books, guys. And in the book, they said something along the lines of, well, if you turn out gay, it's probably because, like, your dad raped you or something in the book. So that's what I'm saying. It's, like, very conservative and very, like, misleading, inaccurate, misinformation, just it's like
it's a lot.
So like you have to make a conscious effort to like unlearn all of that.
Oh my god. It's so now
I have another follow-up question. Yeah. Is it okay?
So I was asking like how it was taught in school. Now I want to know amongst your circles, because I'm sure your circles very you know, the affluent. So amongst your circles, how was sex? Like, how was the conversation about sex amongst your circles? So
my friends and I were like kind of outcasts. I'm going to be very honest.
Yeah.
I only became cooler metric. Like the other years. So we were kind of like always doing our own thing. Mm. Right. And we were like branded as problematic, not by other people, but like teachers as well. It was always, it's there. It's that group, you know?
Okay.
Like, because I think whenever we were given, like, projects to do and you were kind of, like, given freedom.
Yeah.
I would always, like, go there. Mm. I was always in the mood to, like, go there and talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
And with other people, I remember in grade 10, we had this assignment. We had to, like, kind of, like, make your own TED Talk. And everyone talked about, oh my gosh, I love rugby so much. Like rugby's my first love and my second and third.
Come on, and
other people made presentations about their relationship with their mom. Like, she's the best mom in the whole. And then you get me, like.
What did you talk about?
This why it's illegal to be LGBT in Uganda. It was like, what are you talking about? Like, it was like, how dare you
shake us up like that?
It was like, what are you talking about? What is this? Like, your mom, your shoes, like your car, talk about your car. I don't know, like, you know. So we always went there.
No.
We always went there. And so it was very difficult. I think in that space, I felt very, I don't know, not like stifled, maybe. Because like I felt like I couldn't be free and like talk openly. So when I got older and got to university and people were talking about sex freely, and I was very confused, guys. It was like very hard for me to get used to, because the way I grew up and how I socialized, you were not supposed to talk about those things.
No.
Yeah.
I can relate with, you know what I realized? Because I also went to a Catholic school for the first 3 years of high school, and it is very much taboo to talk about it. Any conversation you have about sex is highly conservative, highly normative, like, yay. Actually, don't even talk about sex unless it's absolutely necessary. But for the most part, no. And also in LO, when I went to, should I say, secular school?
Mm-hmm.
When I went to a secular school, it was primarily drugs, you know, all that stuff. I think maybe it was relevant to where I was, because I lived in the hood, you know, and the drugs were very prominent there. So maybe it was relevant to the time. But what I realized about making any conversation taboo is that it has the reverse effect that you expect it to.
Oh, definitely.
So it sparks more interest. The more you make something taboo, people want to know more about it. Mm. That's why the relationship between law and the relationship between the law and a relationship with God is so what's it called? So separate.
Yeah.
Because the law encourages you to look into why I shouldn't do this.
Yes.
And so when we make conversations about sex taboo, the children are going to get the information from the wrong person because they're looking for it. You know what I'm saying? They're looking, I was going to say they're looking at ETV at midnight, but then I'm exposing my age, so let me not do that. But they look for that information in the wrong places.
Yeah.
And it is, I wasn't aware of what sex really was until I got to varsity as well. Because it was there in my face. Orientation, there they are putting a condom on a dildo, and I was like, right. I'm purely veggie. I never slept with anyone before. You know what I'm saying?
Last emails, like, well, if you need help, go to the clinic. We offer contraceptives.
So this is what we do. What?
We have like sexual counseling services. Like,
do you get? So yeah. I feel like those. One way to, I don't want to say combat, but if we are going to move in a direction of maybe conscientizing our youth of the, you know, the perils of sexual activity, let's make those conversations just normal.
I think I like what you said about like normal from the right people.
Yeah.
I had the opposite effect. My school had 19 pregnancies in 1 year. So sex was a very prominent thing amongst like my
peers.
Did you
feel pressure to have sex?
Definitely. Definitely. Like, sex was a very prominent thing about my around my peers. It was like, if you're not having sex, you're behind.
Okay.
If you're not having sex, you are... You see, it shows... The environment like yeah. I was in, you know? And so, like, the conversations were very strife. Like, oh, guys, there was a lot going on in my school. Oh, Jehovah, now that I think about it. Leaked nude pics, leaked sex tapes of students in the
girl,
school.
Was your school blood and water? What?
Hell, you.
Euphoria high.
Is light. It's blood and water light. Because what I saw in my school was crazy. And it was all, like, it was never... It was never about encouraging using protection, encouraging mm-hmm. about safe sex. It was mm-hmm. encouragement about just having sex, you know? Mm-hmm. And it would make sense why we had so many, like, teenage pregnancies in our school. Like, if you're not doing it, you're behind. If you're not doing it, you're weird. You're boring. You're a nerd. You were, like, you look down upon if you're not having sex. That was the school I went mm-hmm. to. So we never really had the right people have the conversations with us. And then when LO happens and they put condoms in dildos in our school for LO.
Really?
Did you guys experience that?
No.
They came with dildos no. and everything in high school. They put us in the field. Everybody's putting a condom on a dildo. And then, like, our natural reaction.
A dildo for each student?
No.
Oh. Must be like, oh,
no. No, it was not that extreme. But, like, the initial reaction was to laugh about it.
Okay.
Like, yeah. Everybody laughed about it, kikied out about it. Maybe it was more comfortable doing that in our school because it was a girls-only school.
Mm-hmm.
So it was easier to do that.
Yeah.
Maybe if it was mixed, it would have been more difficult.
Yeah.
We even had condoms in our bathrooms at school, mm-hmm. and it was a girls-only
what
school.
What the heck?
I think it's a government initiative that they're pushing, you know?
Yeah.
But the thing is, that didn't... Like, they had them there, but they never had conversations about them. Mm. You get me? Like,
yeah.
They had them there, but they never said the importance of... Like, they speak about HIV like it's such a faraway thing, mm. you know? Like,
yeah.
It's not a thing that, like, hey, somebody in this class can have HIV, and that's how much HIV there is in this country, that mm. somebody in a room with you probably has it.
Mm-hmm.
So they never, like, make it... Very like STIs, STDs, it's always AIDS, and it's such a fara, you will look sick, you will. So the conversations that were had were not really in depth, you know, about sex, you know. And then that brings me to my next question for you. How do you think the black community in South Africa, like, what's that? Makes, like, how do you think they influence teenage pregnancy, like encourage teenage pregnancy? Because I feel like it's encouraged in our country, I would lie.
So I think... With some black families, I think the children are very desensitized to sex, right? Like what you said, making it normal but from the right people. I think they're very gentle ways to deliver things to children.
Mm.
And I think something that some people don't take into consideration is that when people live in like a shack or a situation where everyone is cramped into the same room, there's a high chance that they're having sex in front of the children,
mm.
right? And that's something I think about constantly is mm. that... Like, when children are just seeing it, a lot of the time, mm. it's like this thing. Because I know from, like, personal experience, I know of a relative's child who's, like, 5, who witnessed this and was playing with other kids and started touching other kids inappropriately.
Mm-hmm.
And when they were asked, like, where did you see this? Oh, mama, go ahead. And it's like, do you know what I'm saying? It's like, mm. very much this child doesn't understand
mm.
what that is or the severity. And it's like... You're doing it in front of a child. I also know of my friend whose little brother also is like went through the same thing of witnessing sex happen very early. And I think that's one of the things that like the black community is not handling well. It's like time and place for sure. But that there are very gentle ways to It's not to tell your kids to just do it, but you need to like...
There's like a way to like...
There's a way.
To deliver it. And also I think, not showing kids one is like the first step and the number one step. And I think it's the generation before our parents' generation. I don't think they understand that.
Yeah.
Maybe it's because they've seen it and they experienced it. But a lot of cases like that happens amongst our parents' generation, you know, where like they think it's okay to have said like, you know, oh, guys, I'm stressed out thinking about
that's
it.
It's so terrifying because like if your child is like a teenager or like preteen, and they're like undressing another child on a play date.
Mm.
That is sexual assault, like unfortunately. Mm. Like,
mm.
you know, whether they understand the severity of that or not, it is, you know?
Mm.
And I think that's terrifying. Also, I think the black community doesn't have like very healthy conversations with men about like sexual discipline.
Yep. Mm.
It's very much like, well, men are entitled to have sex whenever yeah. they want, however they want. And so, I don't know. It's very much, I don't know, they disempower young black women from a very early age because they tell them like, it's something that's done to you, not with you. So a lot of black women are told very early that it's not something that they have a say in and that you don't have control of the situation. And I think that's also why when you talk to some young women, they're not fully aware that they're being assaulted until you tell them. Like,
that, hey, like, this is actual...
Like, you didn't consent to this. You weren't really comfortable doing that.
You know, the crazy thing to say is that I think it's also like a generation thing as well. Because I was having like... butt heads with my mom a lot of times when we have conversations about sexual assault and rape. Because she... I think she grew up in a generation where your woman... Like, you... was not prioritized. And funny enough, this conversation happened with my mom today in the kitchen in the morning. And it was a thing of like, I was like to her, no, like just because I went to a guy's place does not mean I consented to having sex with him. And then she was like, but then you should prevent it by going to, not going to a guy's place because when you're there, of course you know. I'm like, no, it doesn't work like that, you know? And it's like, I'm like noticing that there's like a difference in like generation and she doesn't get it. And I'm just like, no, saying no is enough. And she doesn't get that because she, I think they were taught that rape is like, you threw a person and you got a random person and it only comes from a stranger. When I was making her aware that it actually can come from a friend, it can come from a husband. It doesn't matter who it comes from. As long as you didn't consent, you didn't want it, and you express that, you have been raped. And she was like, so about it.
Right.
I think, oh, guys.
Guys, do you know it's been an hour?
That's crazy.
That's insane.
Yeah, and we're just halfway through.
That's crazy.
We have to play the game.
That's crazy.
Yeah, guys, I'm so sorry. But I think this conversation has so much meat to it, bro, that like we can't confine it to just 20
minutes. Yeah.
So let's move on to the game.
Yeah,
we're gonna move to the game swiftly. Yeah.
If you guys want more of teenage pregnancy and everything like that with our guest, you can comment down below because there's so many more talking points. I'm so sad. We're only on talking point two.
Really?
It's crazy.
Yeah, it has been an hour.
But yeah, let's go into our game. So our game for today what is it called, actually?
Who said it?
Who said it? So basically, it's a quote from like a historical... Well, is it historical now? Is Nelson Mandela considered historical?
Yes.
Historical, like prominent human activist because it's Human Rights Month. Yay! That's what we're talking about, teenage pregnancy.
Yes. Yeah.
So, it's Human Rights Month, so a historical figure, and you have to guess who said it. Yeah. So, I think for you, Tato is going to give you... Is he? Tato? Yes, he's going to give you yours. I don't want you to prepare for the game because you're a guest. I wanted you to feel special. You come, everything's ready for you. So, you're going to get yours, and then we have to... So, basically, you just say the quote, we guess. Okay. That's how it's going to go. We're also going to give you a quote, you guess. So, who wants to start? Okay.
I'll give it to
you. Yes, at the end. Okay. Okay, let me start with mine.
Okay.
Okay, so everybody's on score zero. I don't know what loser has to do, to be fair. Let's see if you guys know your human rights quotes.
Yeah.
I would like to be remembered as a person who wanted to be free.
What? Let me make a disclaimer, ne?
Okay.
Not well versed in these things.
Okay.
At all.
I just have like bad memory. Like,
you and I who are here.
I'm like bad memory.
Okay, let's just like him. Wild guess. Oh, him.
It's a her.
Oh, her.
It's a her. I would like to be remembered as a person who wanted to be free. It's a her.
Harriet.
No.
Winnie Mandela.
No. It's an American her. It's an American her.
Rosa Parks. Like,
yes.
I was thinking America.
Yeah, okay. The next one is, the future depends on what we do in the present.
Him or her?
Him, old him. South African.
Nelson Mandela.
No.
Yasmin Tutu.
No.
Steve Biko.
No.
No.
Old South African him, really old. Funny enough, he was a molester. Fun fact.
Mahatma Gandhi.
Yes! gosh, you don't even know that! You are my person! But this is not funny, guys. But
you didn't even think twice. You didn't even think twice.
This is so serious. Yeah. I was like, wait, what? I was like, I was like, oh.
South Africa?
Yeah,
technically.
He's not Indian.
He's Indian, but he fought in South Africa. Most of his fights happened here. Okay. But he never fought for black people. He fought for the Indian community. Because he was kind of racist as well. He saw Indians closer to white than black people. So he's like, no, why are we treated like these black people? Ooh. That's what he was fighting for. Ooh. So I don't know why we put him on a pedestal as black South Africans. Ooh. Let's check that. And he was a molester anyways. He loved young girls. He'd sleep with one young girls on his bed. Ooh. He did that.
Okay.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. There's no saint in this world. I'm very serious about these things. Granny. Okay, the last one is very easy. Let no man pull you low enough to hate him.
That is so profound. Is that Maya Angelou?
No, it's not Maya Angelou.
Girl.
Sound like Maya Angelou.
He's a cheater.
Oh, cheater? Aren't
yeah,
they all?
Yeah, he cheated. American. American cheater.
Aren't they all?
They are all. He cheated. He's American.
He cheated on
his wife. Is he white?
Yeah, he cheated on his wife.
Oh, Marilyn Monroe's...
No.
Okay.
Martin Luther.
Yes, Martin
is
Luther.
Yeah.
Girl. I was waiting for you to get it. Like, girl. I was waiting for you to get
it. Guys, I don't know these people's secret lives. I just know them how the rest of the world knows them.
Okay.
He's a cheater?
Yeah.
He cheated on his wife?
Yeah.
Martin.
Martin is a cheater.
Yes.
Human rights are women's rights, and women's rights are human rights.
I feel like I should know this.
Because how old is you? I studied politics.
It's a woman.
South African, American.
American.
Oh, Maya Angelou.
2016. I'm going to say 2016. That should like tell you who it is.
2016, woman American. 2016. 20. Candace Owens.
Don't look in my direction, please.
No, it cannot be Candace Owens. She's not iconic, okay?
Okay, sorry. Okay, fine.
She just has like bad takes over a mic. For like 3 hours a day.
Okay.
That's it.
Okay. Shade. Let me think. Who's iconic? Hillary.
Yes.
Hillary. That person ain't even crossed my mind.
She iconic. She got iconic. Yeah.
Okay. The next one is the greatest glory in living lies. In living lies not in never falling, but in rising every time we fall.
Why are you looking at me? Is it Maya?
No.
Describe the person.
South African.
Male. Nelson Mandela.
Yes.
When you have zero.
When you were looking at me, I'm like, is it Maya? Because I'm waiting for that Maya quote. Damn.
Okay. The next one is, a woman with a voice is by definition a strong woman.
Mm. What? Stop looking at me. Because when you look at me, I'm going to say, it's Maya Angelou.
I'm trying to gas you up here.
And you know what's ridiculous?
Yeah.
I studied political science.
Crazy. That's the ridiculous thing.
That's crazy.
Describe the person.
White American woman.
Yo, and it's not Hillary.
No.
Is she Rose? Oh, no. Is she a president's wife? Former president's wife?
No.
The temptation to cheat.
And just Google.
But anyway, let me play
for you. White American woman. I don't know white American women.
I don't know white American.
I know for a fact you know the husband.
Is he white too?
Yeah.
Do you know how many white American men exist?
Okay,
there?
What's the year? We're helping you here,
okay,
by the way.
I'm not going to give you a year, but I'm just going to say a lot of people want to be as rich as the husband.
Ooh. President.
It's not Melania. It's not Trump.
Does she be saying like iconic stuff anyway?
She don't be saying anything. But anyway.
Okay. Oh no! Checking. You know what? There's this one time she said, "You guys are saying my husband is anti-gay. He quite literally is popular for being exactly that." I don't know. I don't know what her problem is.
I need to tap in.
A white man. His filthy rich Bill Gates wife.
Yes. What's her name?
I don't know her name.
We have A former Miss South Africa with the same name.
Lizelle.
No.
What?
Zozie. Zozie.
You guys are not serious.
Is this starts with a letter what? I don't know her name. Just give us a name. I give up.
Melinda Gates.
I don't know.
We have a Miss SA named Melinda.
Is it not Melinda Bam? Was she not Miss SA?
I don't know who Melinda is. God. Kaya, try.
Sorry to that woman.
I swear Melinda Bam was Miss South
Africa.
You want
to beat us up so bad.
You're so disappointed in our lack of culture.
How dare you guys
not. Imagine being not cultured and we're going into cultural appropriation next. Crazy.
We are sorry. We're not perfect.
Okay.
There is no greater agony than bearing an untold story inside you.
Hey, man. Describe the person. You know this thing. You know
old
how this thing
old black
rolls.
Woman.
My Angelo.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
I've been waiting for this moment the whole game. Let's see. If you are neutral in situations of injustice, you have chosen the side of the oppressor.
Sounds like...
Martin Luther.
No, South African.
Nelson Mandela.
No,
Steve Biko.
No. Yeah.
Yo.
Chris Honey.
No.
Jacob Zuma.
No.
Mandela. I'm just leaving you.
No.
What's that president? Thabo Mbeki.
Nope.
I'm sad. Was he a freedom fighter?
Yeah.
And what's crazy, I think I know.
But he wasn't like in the forefront. Yeah.
And you expect us to know this person?
Desmond Tutu.
Yes.
I thought Desmond.
I know who this is. No, but it's because I went to the Apartheid Museum like last year.
And so the memory is still fresh.
It wasn't an excursion in high school.
No, I went because I wanted to.
Oh, okay.
And I swear there was a card that I took home that has that. It's like a purple card.
It's such a profound code too.
Yeah.
I apply this in my friendships too, by the way.
Yeah.
Tough.
Side eye.
Tough.
No such thing as a neutral friend.
No such thing as a neutral Pick friend. Say louder for the people in the back. Okay. The last one is how I lost it now. Give me a second. There we go. The rights of every man are diminished when the rights of one man are threatened.
That is so true.
America. White. Guy.
How many white men are there in America?
I don't want... There's no other thingy that I can give you. I think he was... I can't say that either. Yeah. Gonna give you guys a clue.
What can't you say?
Is he a president?
Mm.
George Bush?
No.
Recent or older president?
In the 2000s, if I'm not mistaken.
Is it the one who got assassinated?
Yes.
Oh.
That's not 2000s. Was it? No, it's not. Was
late
it
90s?
Maybe.
I don't know, guys.
But I know who you're talking about. What's this man's name?
JFK.
There we go.
JFK.
Very boring JFK, quote, by the way, JFK. Some notes from Desmond.
Wait, is he the one... I cheated too.
Yeah,
yes,
did.
Marilyn Monroe.
With Marilyn Monroe, yeah.
Yeah.
And she did it right. They even flirted right in front of his wife.
Wait, who cheated with Monica Lewinsky? Who's that?
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yo, you must come back and tell us all this.
We should have a segment.
Yeah, you know, that's what Beyonce was talking about in Partition. He Monica Lewinsky'd all on my gown. Like,
that's crazy.
Guys.
That's crazy.
Guys, tonight.
Nah.
And like, just find out what people be talking about in songs.
Okay.
We're going to do our research after this.
We are.
Who won? We don't even know. I think it's Lizabo
won. Yeah, you probably did. Yeah, you probably
definitely
did. Yeah, you cooked me with Kaya. You cooked Kaya.
I'm not even cooked. I'm charred. Burnt.
Nil.
Okay. Zero wrong.
Now we can go into our long topic. Funny enough, the teenage pregnancy was kind of like a long topic. But anyways, it's cultural appropriation versus cultural appreciation.
Yes.
And Kai actually thought she'd be perfect for this because I feel like you have hot takes.
On this.
Feel like on everything.
So I'm going to like give the definition of both. Give me a second. I have too many notes. Okay, cultural appropriation is the act of taking or borrowing elements of a culture, often without understanding or respecting its significance, mm-hmm. or without acknowledging the people or history behind it. Mm-hmm. It tends to be exploitative and can perpetuate stereotypes on or reinforce power imbalances. Mm-hmm. Cultural appreciation, a respectful and informed engagement with aspects of another culture, often with the intent to learn, understand, and celebrate it. Mm-hmm. In this case, people engage with the culture in ways that honor its roots and give credit to community, mm-hmm. to the community that created it.
So basically, like what the Kardashians don't do.
Oh. Yeah. Literally the first thing that came to mind.
Yeah.
What part of culture they have to
Everything.
Everything.
If it ain't the damn cornrows.
It's
the damn clothing, it's the language.
The body.
It's the body.
The body, the lips, the language, the brands.
Yeah, I think they've used blackness as a prop,
mm-hmm.
like a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And that's also why I get really mad when people infantilize the Kardashians. Like, oh my gosh, like they don't know what they're doing. I'm like, they definitely know what they're doing. It's working. I think what, like, angers me is that when actual black people have those features, those traits, they're like sidelined and called ghetto and whatever.
Yeah,
like,
and unprofessional.
They're doing it.
Edgy.
It's edgy.
Trendy.
It's cool. It's different. It's
futuristic.
It's so fab. It's really not. Like, it's really not. I think, you know, the history of black hair is so, especially in America.
Mm. So complex.
Especially in America slavery. It carries so much weight.
Yeah. Mm.
And for a white woman to literally have cornrows just to sell makeup and underwear, it's kind of crazy.
Mm.
It's crazy.
Tone deaf.
Like, just, you know, or just to, like, get 5 million likes on Instagram.
And then is it... And have you noticed how
and then
their brands, like, the brands that they create, target what black women have? Like, for instance, the lip kit. Like they don't line their lips, they line over their lips to make their lips look bigger, like the black features and everything like that. Then you have Kim Kardashian's shapewear, which gives the black woman figure.
Yeah.
Oh, so now you agree with me. We fought over this a couple of weeks ago when I was saying that she's profiting over black women. I said, no, she's a businesswoman. She's an innovator.
She did say she's profiting over black women. I was just coming from that. That was not the argument. The argument was whether she was a great businesswoman or not.
Oh,
and I was like, she is.
But even with that, there's a whole team of people behind her.
That's real.
Making all of these moves, I do not think Kimberly Noel Kardashian could cook any of that on her own.
Fair.
Where have you been all my life?
No, she's
this
so
is the argument that I was
against
making
the Kardashians.
2 weeks, not even 2 weeks. Like December, bro. I was making this argument. I was like, it doesn't make you innovative to you bought the body, first of all. And you bought the body to look like a black woman. Now you have now you think you have black woman problems and you think you're solving a black woman problem when really you're just taking advice from the team that you bought full of black fever.
Literally.
I don't like the Kardashians. I think that's really been very obvious throughout this.
So you were talking about the cornrows. What are your thoughts on white women doing braids?
Apart from the fact that it's going to fall off, they're going to go bald. Like,
it's true.
I think it's always done in such bad taste.
Yes.
Right? Because they always come and say, but the Vikings.
Those are not the same braids.
It's not the same thing.
Yeah.
And then also, I always know that it's coming from a place of some sort of racism. Guys, here's the thing, man. I think
when Matthew has a thing, it's a thing.
I think cultural appropriation is a form of racism, like, right? And I also do think that, like, how do I say this? How do I word this? I think also fetishizing black things is a form of racism.
Oh.
Like, the black experience, I think that's racism, right? Because if you think about it, whenever a white person is called out for having braids, their response is, oh, I never saw it like that, or keep quiet and just not say anything. They always have to, like, now say, but when Keisha, and obviously when you say Keisha, you're looking for, like, a stereotypical black name in America, in the ghetto, in the hood. So already you're being classist, you're being elitist. And it's like, so I think they also know that it's wrong. Like, I think they know. And I think they
at
know
this
damn.
Point.
I think they.
No, they.
I think
do not know. They know.
Yeah, I think that's my take on it. I think they all know what they're doing. So they're just going to act
agree.
It's like it, we don't even have to like unpackage. But they know what they're doing.
They know what they're doing. They are very, very.
They know what they're doing. Like
exactly what you're doing.
You know,
for me, what to call this? For me, it's in terms of like the braid thing, the braids thing. Nah? For me, it's like cornrows. I'm like pro. Cut the cameras, cut the lights. There's no need for you to do it. There's no, like, your hair doesn't need cornrows. We did it as a protective hairstyle from where we're coming from. And then during slavery, it was used, the intricate designs were used to pass messages on to other slaves to say that there's a river there, there's a that there. As a map, you know. So we've turned it, like, into something completely different. So you have no business messing, like playing over there, like the big 1-2 cornrows. Okay, I understand, you know, the two braids, the two plaits. Understand, but now when you start doing the twists and the turns and the integrated designs, you have no business playing on that playground, because why are you doing it? You know, in terms of like the braids per se, I don't know how to feel about it. You know, I don't know how to feel about white women doing braids. Like, for me, it's like I'm not completely like against it, but I'm not completely for it. I'm like, if you are aware that that damages your hair, it's like with Relaxa. Black women relax our hair. We're very well much aware the impact it does on our natural hair if not done well, but we still do it because we feel like we look nice, you know? If you're aware about what it does to your hair and it's like, we can't warn you, you know, you know, and so you making that decision yourself to go and do that, and you're doing it because, like, because our braids, guys, the reason why they steal is because it's beautiful. The reason why they steal is because it's excellent, you know? And maybe she wants to feel beautiful in that. I don't know how to feel like being against it or being for it.
You see, what you're saying, that's also another thing. Like, when we say black is beautiful, we have, like, a herd of white people saying, it's not. But when it's time to appropriate our culture, all of a sudden... Do you know what I'm saying?
Okay, all of a sudden it's beautiful.
I think black people fight very hard to, like, appreciate their hair, their features, and all of this negative, like, ideas we get about hating our features come from white people. And then they get to all of a sudden enjoy those things. That's what I don't like.
When you put it that way, okay, I hear it.
I'm very, and this is gonna be stuck, but I'm anti-white doing anything black, ever. Even if it's the language, the slang,
yeah,
period, slay, yes, all mama, of yes, slay mama, okay, boo. Down.
Shh. Work.
Don't say then, none of that.
Okay, what happens if it's a white person who grew up in a black community and their peers and everybody around them speaks that way? Because, like, dialect is something that we take from the communities we grew up in. That's why in South Africa, we don't have black people that sound the same. There's no black accent here because we come from different places. There's black people who have the twang. There's black people who have the hood slang. There's pitori. There's thing because it's the in communities in which they grew up in. So if a white person grew up in a black community, where are they supposed to get the whiteness, you know, in terms of their language and their speech? Like, it's different if you're a valley girl and then you're coming like Bhutang, that's different. But if you grew up in the hood, what are we supposed to do? Go and indoctrinate you and put you in a white school so you learn how to speak like your people?
No, I'm gonna say no, because culture and race are two different things. Right, so I think by virtue of being a white person, learn. The same way that we are intentional about learning where we come from, learn about where you come from and where to draw the line. Because, yes, you were part of the culture growing up and you may even participate. That's perfectly fine. There are many white people in South Africa who speak vernac and the same slang, which that's not what we're against. But there is a line. When you grow up in that community, there is a line. You cannot, for instance, even in America, even if you grew up amongst black people, you cannot say the N-word.
That's
Something that the people around you conscientize you on, but you should also take it upon yourself to learn where you come from and whether, okay, hot take, white people don't have a culture, but what your culture is as a white person, you know what I'm saying? But and what your history is. No, take it, know you look different from the rest of the people in the school.
Yeah.
Are you not going to figure out what is different about me besides the way that I look? What is different?
The
history?
Accents and all those things. Like, we have black people who grew up in colored communities with a colored accent. Okay. We don't point a finger and say, cancel that accent and stuff, because that's the community they grew up in. As a child, you develop, you're a sponge. You come not knowing anything.
Yeah.
You sponge and absorb what's in your community, you know, what's around you. So in terms of, like, honestly, I feel like if a white person grew up in a black, that's why, like, you find white people who are in KZN or, like, especially the rural areas and stuff, like, they tend to speak Zulu better than Joburg Zulus.
Yeah.
And they even have that accent, because there's nothing you can do about that. You are a sponge. Your dialect is not something you are born with. Mm. It's something you absorb. Mm. So no matter how much learning you try and do, you are not in that learning environment all the time. You are 24/7 here in this Black community. So you're 24/7. Mm-hmm. Exposed to that accent. Mm-hmm. So for me, with the accent thing, I'm like, maybe not. Okay. But then with like things like the braids and the stuff like that, I get it. That's where you can actively learn these, like the N-word. Yeah. We actively learned not to say the N-word, even though they say it when we're not there.
It's true.
Yeah, like we know the truth.
Oh, I know.
We know you. We know. Mm-hmm. But then like you actively learn not to do cornrows. You actively learn not to like do certain things, you know, like that's different, you know. That's my thought.
Do you guys think Black people can appropriate other people's culture?
Yes, 100%. 120%, like nails, acrylic nails. We like to claim that thing like we invented it. We like to claim that thing like we made it. You know, like, oh, white people can't do acrylic nails, like we did that. We didn't do that. It was something that came from another culture. In Vietnam, in China, do you know in China, the queens, the emperors and everything had like gold plates, like, you know, like the stiletto sharp, like gold plates with intricate designs and everything like that. And that inspired the designs and stuff of our nails. We don't bring the recognition there. See a Chinese person do that design. It's like, oh, it's cultural appropriation, not realizing that it's actually their culture.
Mm. What do you think?
Like, I see sometimes like Black people having those like Chinese themed parties, or like having a Chinese era.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Chinese era.
Ooh.
Oh no, like that's a thing. Like I've seen some Black people actively like they will switch their captions on Instagram to Chinese.
Mm.
And then they'll try to like speak in a very weird way. Mm. Like, I don't know. I think sometimes we can like appropriate culture to our benefit.
I agree.
You know, like obviously not against white people.
Yeah. Other but cultures.
Actual culture.
I think sometimes we do also kind of overstep.
Mm.
Or maybe see it as sometimes also as Black people, we make the mistake of thinking we're the only people of color with a culture.
Mm.
So then we look at everything else as a gimmick, as like, oh my gosh, they're being weird. And like, you know, and also use certain like maybe racial slurs against other people of color.
Mm.
And like, no, it's not that. And when those people like express their frustration with us doing certain things, we're like, no, but it's not that serious.
It's not that serious.
It's not that serious. And I'm like, okay, now we're starting to sound white.
Yes.
Now we're starting to sound white.
I do agree. We can culturally appropriate with the nails.
With the nails. With the lip liner. Lip liner is not you. You took that from Latino women and you ran with it and you act like you invented lip liner. Like literally.
Why are you so mad?
No.
Girl, you're so passionate about that.
She's like, no, because the thing is, like, I understand that we've been hurt so much as a community and as a race, and so many other things have been appropriated and stuff. But we don't like to call ourselves out and to hold ourselves accountable, especially American Black people. They act like the newest thing that came out of the block. I'm sorry, y'all. Love y'all to bits, but you act like you invented everything. I remember when the TikTok was closing down, there was this one girl who did a whole TikTok saying that, oh, when Black Americans are not in TikTok, I wonder what's going to happen to them. And the South Africans were like... South Africans, are we? Yes, Ila.
South Africa has its own unique TikTok culture.
Exactly.
Like,
and then she made a whole video like, we the main characters. You guys take dances from us. You take slang from us. You hypo. You're the only people with slang. You're the only people with dances. You're the only people with, like, it's a whole different thing, which I actually wrote a question down that I want to ask you guys.
Okay.
Do you think we can, because culture and race is two different things.
Yeah.
Do you think Black people can culturally appropriate from each other?
Sure.
Ooh, that's complicated.
That is complicated. Because, I'll say this, there was one, I think it was one or two times that somebody had accused me of culturally appropriating UK Black people because of Adeola, right? Mm. And I was like, my initial response would have been like, you tripping. But I had to think about it a little bit, right? I think when you appropriate, you show no appreciation for and you give no credit to and you are actually stealing, right? It only profits you. Maybe you are making a commodity. You're making it a commodity, right? So I do think that... Sometimes, like for instance, when South African women wear boo-boo. Is it called a boo-boo?
Yes, the boo-boo, boo-boo dress, yes.
Right? I don't think that's appropriation because we're all of one race, right? And we indulge in each other's culture as well. They indulge in piano, we indulge in throw beats. You know what I'm saying? Like, we share with one another. We share the food, the cuisine. You'll see South African people trying egusi, and then, you know, Nigerian people trying mohodu. So I don't think it's necessarily appropriation because we share in the same aspects of culture, but there's a thin line. Show appreciation for and give credit to. So even with Adeola, I always said that accent and that kind of humor came from watching UK comedy. I credited it to, unfortunately, Young Philly.
Unfortunately.
Credit at the time when he wasn't.
Yeah, when we didn't know.
You get it. So I credited to Beta Squad, Young Philly, Darkest, all of that, because that's where that humor, that character came from. So I do think that the responsibility that we put on other races to give credit to us when we create something, let's also give credit to each other. There's no harm in giving credit to the Nigerian people and saying, oh, this boo-boo dress and this head wrap from Nigeria, I got it from this tailor, whatever the case may be, I love it, na-na-na. Give credit, but I don't think appropriation?
I beg to differ, actually.
Really?
Because most, like, there's this woman who does, like, she has the whole boo-boo business and everything like that. She never expresses credit. Uh-huh. Like, you saying we should, but we don't.
Okay.
We don't credit them. We don't credit Nigerians. We take their designs and we put our South African print and we say it's a Zulu traditional dress. While the silhouettes, the whole thing is not anything from us. It's anything from them. But we never credit that to them. We actually, that's one culture that we refuse to credit, and a lot of what we do comes from them as well. It's the same way they might also like take from us, but we don't credit them. Like, you're selling a whole, it's like you're doing what white people do, what Skims is doing, what thing. Yes, we know the underlying idea stems from that culture, but you're not making it away. There's nothing in the description, there's nothing in the bio, there's nothing in the company history that says this is from Nigeria, this is Kenyan inspired, this is Lesotho inspired. Nothing says that. And you're selling the attire.
Okay.
Are
you going to bring our thoughts together? Help us.
So there's something I want to say. What do you think of, like, music then? Like, with hip-hop, right? Do you feel as though, like... Okay, it's two things. Do you feel like hip-hop right now, as it stands, do you think that, like, a lot of white people are, like, you know, I don't know, stealing from hip-hop culture to kind of, like,
fully
profit off of it? And do you also think that, like, I don't know, our rappers too maybe are, like, kind of taking from there? Like, I don't know. What do you think?
You know what's so crazy? He became a host.
Fast in a hurry. You became a host.
That is so crazy. Welcome. Yeah, shame. With the white people thing, shame, yes. Yeah. Very much so.
Yeah.
You know why I say it? Mm-hmm. When Beyonce started making country music, they acted like country music is theirs. Yeah. They were so quick to be like, it's ours. No, black women should be in country music. Yeah. But then when they do rap music, we're supposed to be listening to the rap songs and everything like that. Mm-hmm. Well, everything is inspired from the black culture. And another thing about cultural appropriation, besides giving credit, is not understanding the history of where that type of thing comes from. You're not acknowledging the history and the depth and the importance it serves in that community.
Yeah.
We could not indulge in a certain type of music. We used that. It was street music. The rap was from the streets.
Yeah.
It was used to express the struggle. It was used to express what they were going to.
Yeah.
It was used to do that. So when I... No tie to the streets. You don't even know what the streets look like. And you're coming like, bodies drilled. I'll talk, maybe UK, I don't know if UK rap also.
like last year when there was a debate during the whole Kendrick and Drake thing.
Yeah.
A lot of like white podcasters came forward to say, oh my gosh, like Kendrick isn't good because he makes Free the Slaves music. But I'm like, you see, that's a problem with cultural appropriation, because now, like what you're saying, hip-hop has always carried so much weight in the Black community. It was used to document the Black experience, offer commentary on what's happening. So because a lot of outsiders have been let into it.
It's been commercialized.
A lot of outsiders have been let into it. They can, you know, rap in a certain accent in their songs and use certain beats.
Yeah.
And go stand in the hood as a white man. Yeah. And like, you know. But you're talking about whatever. They talk about whatever they talk about. I don't know. Money. I don't know.
Yeah.
White capitalist stuff. I don't know. Yeah. Right? It's and then untrue. And then when an actual like Black person is using the genre for exactly what it
was meant for.
They call it Free the Slaves music. And it's like, even if it's being called Free the Slaves music, what would be wrong about a Black person talk about slavery in
hip-hop? Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying? It's like when I think of cultural appropriation, like the one that bothers me this year. I even wanted to make a TikTok about it. I'll make it later.
This your TikTok. come on.
Later. I think about it always. I'm like, music is part of Black culture, you know? It's part of Black culture. And it's sad that, like, they've gone past stealing from hip-hop. But now it's like hip-hop is being made for white people. Like, I think about how hip-hop right now is, like, tailored for the white ear. If you think about the things that are discussed in hip-hop right now, like the crime, whatever, like the glorification of drugs, those are the things that white people consider to be the Black experience. That's what that's what white people consider to be Black culture. And so they kind of want like a fetishized like experience of Black culture. That's why I think they like, have you guys noticed mumble rappers, look at the crowds in their concerts, white kids that think this is Black culture. They think, oh my gosh,
like they're part of it. Like,
yeah, we're going to talk about shooting guns and doing drugs. But Black. And I'm like, but that's not Black culture. Like, you know, it's like there's there's like nuance to why there's drug problems and crime in Black communities.
Yeah, but that's not what it's all
about.
That's
not Black culture. Like, that's
and
not Black culture.
We were not rap, and that's the thing. I feel like we've also lost ourselves in it because we never rapped about those things to glamorize them. We rapped about it because we're expressing the reality of what it is to be Black. So now when you're glamorizing it and you're like, ha, God, bitch, what? But that is not something you should be like, it was never meant to glamorize. It was meant to show how real it is, how tough it is. Like, if you think of like the Biggie music, the Tupac music, that rap, yes, they were talking about those things, but it's not giving, who's that guy? Dom something, his name starts with a D or something, he was in jail, but he got shot. got shot. Like, he made a whole song about all the people he killed.
Is it King Von?
Yes, King Von. Yes, it's King Von. Okay. And it's like, you've lost the touch and the source about what it was. Capitalism. TikTok rap music.
Right. It's also why, like, it's very frustrating when, like, how do I say this? When, like, white kids kind of, like, use hip-hop as, like, a rebellious thing. As like part of their rebellious phase, right? Like to rebel against whiteness and like, oh my gosh, like I'm Black now. But it's like, okay, you can be socially Black, but you'll never suffer the consequence of actually being a Black person.
Exactly.
Because like when you play that music, I know their parents, Melanie and Matthew, are probably saying, turn off that N-word music right now. Turn it down. Right? But when it's time for them to get their trust fund, they're back to wearing floral shirts and going to wine farms and they're playing country music. And it's like very frustrating. It's like, hip-hop is such an integral part of Black culture. And that is also why when people say, okay, I don't like it when this rapper and this rapper does X, Y, and Z, white people are like, well, how can this be Black culture? We're just talking about shooting people and doing drugs. Do you know what I'm saying? Because we've let them in for so long, and they've watered it down, they've turned it into their own thing. And I don't know.
And we made it okay. Like, oh, we made... And I see you even with, like, K-pop, like... K-pop rap. Have you heard like Koreans rap music? And it's like, it's so like you know in Korea no one has your accent. You know there's no way you got the yeah bam. Like you don't even sound right saying those things.
Do you know Lisa from Blackpink?
Yeah.
She says stuff like finna gonna wanna. You said the same thing three times. Finna gonna wanna. Like that's like
finna gonna wanna what to wonder. Like damn, I'm in my am and
and also, it's funny that they say all of that while being so anti-Black. There's always a racist scandal in K-pop. There's always braids.
There's always
some tanning and...
There's always a lot involved.
Editing their skin to look very Black. There's always something.
Yeah. I hear you. Like, I would understand Japanese rappers rapping more like that, because, like, the Japan, like, street culture, they actually have street culture in Japan. Like, they had, like, the mafia and everything. They know what it means to get shot, to get popped. Korea? Girl.
It's also with the samples that they use. I get so irritated.
Yes, they use, like, Nicki.
Samples in, like, black music, right? We're supposed to, like, refer to very specific things. If I'm sampling, like, a song that Nina Simone made in the Civil Rights Movement, during the Civil Rights Movement, and I'm talking about that in, like, you know, my song, I want to convey the message. Now someone will sample, like, Young, Gifted, and Black to talk about how much they love being a white person with blue eyes. And I'm like, what are you doing? What are we doing? Right? When did we lose this?
You guys just... It's like a window of light had just opened in my mind. I'm like, what? You see, especially when you said that rap, hip-hop appeals to the white ear now. Mm. I was like, okay, wait, let me let him cook. And then you flipping Gordon Ramsay the thing, and I was like,
it's so frustrating. I'm always like, oh my gosh, guys,
let it go.
The thing is, I kind of lost my train of thought here. What do I say? I was talking about the samples.
Yes.
I'm like, the samples now serve, like, no greater purpose than being, like, an intro to a song.
I remember when people were sampling Blood on the Leaves.
Yeah, it's like, it really breaks my heart, because it's like, these are supposed to be very specific references to black history, black culture. Yeah. And that's also another thing, is that when you want to talk about colorism, when you want to talk about racism, when you want to talk about baby mama culture, your white listeners are not going to tune into that, because they don't care.
Yeah.
You know, they don't care. And when you sample certain things, that's what I want to say. Samples, I think, also are not allowed to serve a greater purpose nowadays, because, like, if I'm referring to the Civil Rights Movement as a white person, do they care?
No.
Do they care?
No. But then that also, like, makes me think about how, like, even us as, like, black South African rappers, because rap is not something that, it doesn't come from us, sadly. We don't even understand. We are exactly like the white people, most of us. We don't even understand the significance of it and stuff. Like, the music we make, they're gimmicking. We're making the music for the white ear. Yeah. Like, when we're sampling, we also don't talk about the struggle. We also don't come back into what it's about. And, like, we just like to dance, as long as it sounds good, as long as the thing is good. But she's something that, like, meant, like, this was a song that was used to march.
Yeah.
This was a song that was used to, as a way to fight back in the easiest. Like, this music was never allowed in the radio at some point.
Exactly.
Because it was like, it was propaganda. It was whatever, And then you sampling it to make, like, a booty hole, booty shake.
Yeah. I mean, like, a lot of, like, artists during those movements, if you made a song literally, like, about anything to do with advancing black people, you lost your record deal.
Yeah.
It was not played
on the radio.
It was curtains.
You didn't get an you never got a platform. Yeah. Like, it was really hard for you to get a platform. If you did get one, you fought and you struggled.
That's why when hip hop became this, like, capitalist wet dream, we were all like I don't know, fantasizing about, like, when rappers are talking about wanting to be like white men in their songs. I'm like, oh no, we lost it. Oh, we're lost. We've lost it.
And the way they rap about, the way they rap about black women is the way white men see black women. Mm?
Yes. It's that's what I'm saying. It's very much for the white ear. It's very much for the white ear. It's every fetishized part of the black experience.
I'm about to delete every song on my playlist today.
I think with South African rap, it's very different, a little bit different, because I do know that some South African rappers are very, like, true to keeping it about our experience, whatever. Mm. Like, I think that's why.
But then, have you noticed the ones that do that, their careers don't take off as far? Like, they have that hit song, da 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 da, but then they don't grow.
But you also need to remember that, like, record labels are heavily monitored by white people, right? Like, the label execs, a lot of them are white. And I think a lot of them purposely fund music that is supposed to be disparaging to the black community.
We did speak about that when we were talking about stereotypes.
Yeah.
Black women, like, stereotypes.
It's very much like they pay for that to be in the media. And it's very frustrating. Ugh.
This conversation got very heavy.
Very quickly.
Very quickly.
And you took it to places I didn't even expect.
Same. That's why I was sitting here silenced.
What? Oh my God.
Silenced.
So glad to have you on our couch.
Thank you so much.
Oh my God.
Thank you so much for coming. And you know what? Like, you know, as you were speaking, I'm like, this is something that he did in his degree. Definitely. Like, art history is like.
Yeah. No, I did. I think, if I remember correctly, I wrote an essay about The Hate U Give. You know the movie?
Mm.
The Hate U Give. And essentially what the assignment was to do was like unpack stereotypes of any sort that you found in the movie, in a show. So half of my essay was about The Hate U Give. The second half was about How to Get Away with Murder.
Mm.
And I was like, How to Get Away with Murder is a very excellent show, right? I love that show. One of my favorites all time. I think I've rewatched it like a couple of times.
But
I was like, the way Annalise was like written as a character, every harmful stereotype about a black woman.
It's was
like,
the...
So she's a successful career woman, right?
Who unmarried.
But the thing is, for her to be successful, she's cold.
Mm.
Black women who are successful are all cold. She doesn't have a child. Black women who are successful. Like, there's this narrative that, like, black women's only purpose is to bear children.
Mm.
So when black women want to pursue success, whatever,
it means
they have to not have children.
Yeah.
I was like, again, that's not true. And the other thing was that for her to be validated as a successful career woman, she had to get a white man.
Oh my God.
She had to get a white man.
Oh my goodness.
It's like
Olivia. It's giving Olivia Pope as well.
Because a lot of like black women who want to be ambitious are masculinized, right? And there's this idea that like only white men allow black women to kind of like be in their masculine energy. But I'm like, that's racist. I don't know. I don't want to hear that. I don't want to hear that. I was like, it limits the black community because it tells me that like you're actively telling black men that the only way to like assert dominance is overpowering. I mean, that is a thing that sometimes I think some black men do become toxic to their families because it's how they can have power that's equal to like white men, right? Because they might not have that power that they have in the home, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know, bullying your children, you come home, the children go to their rooms, you get this piece of chicken, whatever. It's like, yes, you have power in the household, but it might not translate to the real world. In the real world, you mean nothing. In the corporate ladder, you mean nothing.
Mm.
And I think that show was like one of the first times I realized that, my gosh, this is how people perceive black women.
Mm.
So I wrote about that. And then in The Hate U Give, I wrote about how that child, the one who was shot. Have you guys seen the movie?
I have.
Oh, no.
I haven't.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Have you seen? Okay.
Yeah, I get angry very quickly.
Okay. So it's like, the child was shot. That scene where she goes and does the interview to talk about him and his life. I was like, that was such an important thing, right, for her to do. Because a lot of the time when we defend victims of police brutality, like George Floyd is a perfect example, a lot of white people, even till this day, don't see that his life was like valuable because they'll bring up his past transgressions, they'll throw allegations of drug use or whatever the case is, or, you know, he was unemployed or he was lower class. But when she went to that interview, and it's something I say all the time whenever I talk about black people now because of that movie, she was like, he had a past, he had a present, and he had a future. He's a person, right?
Mm.
I think as black people, we are not people to them.
Ugh.
We're like these things. So when you convince people that police brutality is wrong, a lot of the time you have to start by convincing them that you're a human being as a black person. And I think,
Maybe that's why they find it easy to appropriate our culture.
Yeah, because they're not appropriating people. They're appropriating these things. Yeah.
That are profitable.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yo, this was an in-depth topic. Yo, there's so I would love to have you on like
please
a topic
back.
On an episode
please.
Of like on
you
racism.
Now.
I will be back.
Please do come because we're gonna you know. Oh my God. Wow. I don't know who's gonna come after this and top you.
The bar is so high for the first guest of 2025.
Wow.
Ridiculously high, and you're so articulate, well versed. You are educated, Wow, look at me praising you. Go ahead. But like, you are a wonder to listen to as well. I've learned a lot from you in this sit down. Thank you so much for coming. It's been an absolute pleasure just to listen to your insights. And for me, you are the epitome of Black excellence. Perfect. To be 20 years old, doing your honors, and to have so much wisdom as well. Like, that is it. That is and it. So like,
awareness.
We can't wait for what you pull off this year, what you pull off in years to come, because you are incredible.
Fully, truly, truly.
What?
Wow.
Wow. You're 20.
She's acting like you're a baby.
I can't wait. No, not like he's a baby. No,
but then,
like,
what more can
what more
can you do?
Dude, like.
Like, what years
if
can.
If I could find somebody in their 30s who thinks and talks like you, it's so rare.
Yeah, it's very difficult.
I'm impressed by you, bro. Like, oh my God, come back and speak to me again. You are incredible. Black excellence at its finest. Thank you so much for coming through.
Thank you so much. Like, I'm also, like, wow. Like, wow, like my talking points were useless with you here.
Yeah, I know.
Fully useless. Fully useless.
All right, guys, we're going to continue. Did I cut you off?
Yeah, no. Carry on. With you? Sure? Yeah, 100%.
We're going to continue the conversation. Well, finish it off and take a more personal side to it over on our memberships. Our memberships has decreased from 149.99 rand to 39.99 rand. That means more of you can come over on that side where we get a little bit more comfortable, a little bit more personal, and you are yet to receive some perks from being a member. So please, 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 if you enjoyed this episode, there's more on that side. If you enjoyed our guest, his social media handles and all of his platforms are linked in the description. Guys, this is just a little of what he has to offer.
Yeah.
It's just a taste. And we know, I already know, guys, I know Justy's, you guys already saying, bring him back, bring him. He's already back. Like, by the time you watch this, he already came back. So, thank you so much. Do you want to do the cues?
Subscribe, like, comment, share, and comment.
What a fist. A fist?
It's human rights, man.
Do we have a fist like this in the emojis?
Maybe do. Okay, emojis. Comment a fist to show that you got to the end.
A mandala.
Bye, y'all.
Bye, guys.